Success stories and interviews with game changers and thought leaders who have overcome both in life and in business. Welcome to Vertical Momentum.
Welcome back to Vertical Momentum. I'm your host, Richard Kaufman. Guys, VM Nation, today is going to be an amazing day. Guys, have you ever thought to yourself, how am I going to come back from PTS? How do I come back from military sexual trauma? How do I come back from having mental health issues? Well, this is what this whole talk is going to be about today. But first, I want to thank our sponsors. As you guys know, my sponsors are 100% veterans, 100% of the time. So if you guys, like me, like to have beautiful home goods, home furnishings, if you love woodworking, definitely check out the guys at Balish Woodworks. Make amazing stuff for your home. They actually made for my wife, they actually made a cutting board that she uses to this day. She will not cook on anything but Kurt Balish's cutting board. So definitely check out Balish Woodwork. Michelle, how are you doing today?
Hello, 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 Richard. I am doing absolutely phenomenal. Every day above ground is and not under is a wonderful day.
Yes, 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 yes. So what's going on and how was your weekend?
My weekend was great. Great. It's always, you know, busy, filled with projects and working on the next thing. But also, you know, you got to get some self-care in there. So I had a phenomenal weekend.
I love it. So we've been talking back and forth about getting together. And now we finally get to do it. So first of all, I want to thank you for your service to this great nation. I love having my female veteran come on the show because I don't think you guys get enough props and you guys don't get enough recognition. So that's why I'm proud to always have female vets come on my show. So tell us a little bit about your story, where you're from, and what made you the woman that you are today.
Wow. Okay. That's a loaded question. But first of all, thank you so much. And thank you for your service as well. Where do I begin? Like, who is Michelle?
We're going to hop in the Wayback Machine.
Okay.
What was Michelle like as a little girl?
So as a little girl, Michelle was vivacious, energetic, outgoing. I loved to dance. I loved to sing. I loved anything that was entertainment. And I was up until the age of 6. And then, you know, everything kind of changed. That was the beginning of the journey to making me the woman that I am today. So I loved entertaining. I loved anything, you know, what I now know to be thespian. I just loved, you know, creative. I'm a very creative being. So that's how I was as a little girl.
So why, what happened at the age of 6?
So at 6, I started being sexually violated by male family members in my family. And that began my journey to actually shutting down. You know, I learned very early to suppress, you know, to survive, to suppress any kind of emotions, feelings, anything like that. And so I my personality, everything began to shift and change. And I just completely went into survival mode, which is, you know, at a young age, at that time, as a child, you don't know what's normal and what's not. And so the dysfunction became functional to me. That was my norm. And I learned very early to be invisible, you know, visibly invisible. And I believe that carried on into, you know, my latter years and even into my journey into the military. But I digress and go back. That was when everything shifted for me.
Now, you know, I've had a young lady, her name is Annette Wittenberger, on, and we talked about some things that we need to look out for. And a lot of times when and men and women, they both get abused. So right. It's no longer just male or female. But a lot of times when a child gets abused, their attitude changes. Mm-hmm. It's where at one point, if they were really outgoing, they become really shut in.
Withdrawn, yes.
Or if they were really, you know, shut in and all of a sudden they start acting out.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something I think we really need to start looking for.
Or they become extra clingy, or, you know, they just act out when they're around certain individuals. I mean, you know, parent, we as parents, we need to look out and be alert for all of that. If they start wetting their bed, if they start crying, you know, when they get in certain environments, I think we really need to, you know, be more attentive to that, to those cues. Yeah.
Now, did this keep going on until you were a teenager, or did it finally stop?
Actually, it went on through my early adult, you know, early childhood years, you know, to the age between the ages of 6 and 9. It was by male family members. It progressed when I was 16. My parents were also military, so my mom at the time, these, and it progressed to a couple of her coworkers. I was, you know, it was more than just the touching. It was an actual, you know, full sexual assault. And then progressed on into my military career as sexually assaulted at my first duty station.
So now, you know, a lot of times when a female is assaulted, they stop trusting men altogether.
Stopped trusting everyone.
Yeah. So what was that like? Okay, so you joined the military. First of all, you got to tell me your recruiting story, because I love to hear everybody's recruiting story. Right. What's yours?
Well, mine is kind of funny. So both, as I said earlier, both my parents were military, and my mom was a yeoman. My stepdad was a aviation ordnanceman, and he later went SWO, CWO. And so I was actually wanting to, I joined the military for two reasons. I wanted to recreate myself and get away and reinvent myself from all the dysfunction that I grew up in, because at that point I was a failed suicide attempt. And so that, you know, first and foremost, I wanted to recreate myself. But second, I've always had a heart to serve. And, you know, I thought, what better way, you know, to serve than to serve my country. And, you know, I was working at a Walmart. You know, my parents were like, you know, you got to do something. And I was like, well, I don't know what I want to do. I don't want to go to college. I'm not going to waste your money. I don't know what I want to do. So they really literally called my bluff. And, you know, they had me go down and see a recruiter. And, you know, I was like, well, they're like, well, if you're going to go in, you need to go into one of the fields that's going to be most beneficial to you. And that's how I took the ASVAB, and I scored high enough to go into cryptologic field. So I was a CT, a spook, as they call this. Yeah.
So did you automatically take to the military?
You know, I did, because I feel like this, Richard, I was groomed from a young age to know and learn how to keep secrets. And essentially my job was to help the military keep their secrets a secret. And so I adapted very well to the military because it was structured. I knew what I had to do. It was a new environment. It was a way for me to create myself. But again, all of that was shattered, you know, at my first duty station when, you know, I was violated by a fellow service member that I was serving alongside. So it was like I felt that there was no getting away from whatever this was, you know, this cloud over my head, for lack of a better word.
So now you said, how long did you do in the military?
I did 13 years. I did 13 years. I was released for a heart condition. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So now a lot of people, you know, like for me, I got thrown out of the military the first time for being a drug addict, got in the second time. Did everything I could to become the ultimate soldier, and then got hurt on duty. And, you know, you can't see, you can't shoot. We don't need you. Bye-bye. You got to go.
Right.
And I did everything I could to become Sergeant Kaufman. Mm-hmm. And the day that they finally said I was no longer Sergeant Kaufman was the day I attempted suicide.
Mm-hmm.
Because I didn't know who Richard was.
Outside
it was a very scary moment. So yes. Talk to us, you know, after doing 13 years in the military, what it was like, what your transitioning was like.
Even prior to transitioning, you know, I had hit, you know, rock bottom, because, you know, in an effort to avoid all of the feelings that were coming up for all of the things that I'd experienced prior to enduring the military, you know, I made my the fourth of five failed suicide attempts. And then, you know, they were sending me to psych, and I was like, I'm not crazy. You know, and they kept sending me back and forth, and I'm like, there's something wrong with me, but I'm not crazy, because I was having, you know, issues with my heart as well. And so, you know, I stopped showing up for work, and, you know, you do that in the military, there's consequences. I stopped taking care of my home because I was married by that time, and I ended up married another service member who was abusive. So, you know, I was being physically abused in my marriage, and you know, I was trying to deal with, you know, the memories of what happened in the military from another service member and prior. So everything came to a crashing halt. You know, I wasn't paying bills. I was not taking care of my hygiene, and I just hit rock bottom. And when they me, you know, with the five mental health challenges that I have, you know, the generalized anxiety disorder, major depressive disorder, complex post-traumatic stress, panic disorder, and agoraphobia. And I just felt like I was damaged goods. You know, I hit this brick wall, you know, do not pass go, do not collect $200. I was no longer viable to the military, to myself, to the world. That was my mindset. And so when I came out, I didn't know what to do. I was broken. I didn't know what direction to go in. I didn't know, I didn't even see, you know, how people tell you to look for the future, plan for the future, what, you know, to try to visualize what your future. When I looked at that, I just saw blackness, darkness. I didn't see anything. And so for that first year, I didn't do anything. I was actually bedridden because of the challenges I was having, you know, the heart condition that I had. And so as I gradually began to get a little bit better, I was like, what do I do with my life? And I tried working in corporate America. That didn't work for me. You know, it just made me spiral even more. I tried a number of things. I think I job hopped for like 10 years. And in between that time, you know, I ended up losing my home and being homeless and ending my marriage and, you know, trying to take care of a daughter. So, you know, it was just a very turbulent, uncertain time because I didn't know who Michelle was outside of serving.
So I know for me in my life, well, besides, you know, getting out and having to, reimagine my life, there was, you know, there's certain moments in our lives that I call them come to Jesus moments. Mm-hmm. And one of them was the morning of 9/11. And that's what changed my whole life and trajectory of my life. But the second was the Monday after I attempted suicide, that I finally broke down and decided to go get help and have a therapist and mm-hmm. get my life together. So what was your come to Jesus moment? What can you bring it back to that moment?
Yes, I can, very vividly. It was the fifth and final suicide attempt that I'd made. And it was at that point that I realized that I couldn't, you know, push my way through. I couldn't will my way through. I couldn't, you know, try to achieve my way through, that I really had to address these feelings, these emotions. I'd lost within a 2-month time period at that time, a job, my home, my car, the support of my family, because they didn't know what was going on and I didn't know what was going on with me. And I realized that I can't do this alone on my own. So I finally accepted the fact that I did have some mental health challenges and that I needed help with it. And that's when I started getting the care that I needed and started taking it seriously, because I was in denial. You know, they had tried meds and different therapies, and some of the therapies for me were more detrimental because I had compounded trauma. And so it caused me to spiral more. And that's why I just continued to run from it. But then I realized, if I don't get a grip on this, I'm not coming back, because I'm drowning. You know, I've lost everything. That was my rock bottom. And so that was my paradigm shift. And that actually, what helped me in that was, it was another female veteran saw that I was struggling. She saw beyond the mask that I was wearing, that we often wear, you know, that mask of strength, like everything is okay and we're dying inside. And she was like, you know, I think this program would be good for you. So I applied and got accepted into this program, where I ended up with 10 other disabled veterans. I'm going on this expedition, and I had no prior mountaineering experience. And I ended up climbing the Andes Mountain in Peru, you know, at 17 plus thousand feet, and hanging off the side of that mountain. That was my shift. That was the moment that I realized that I did not want to die. I just did not want to carry this excruciating pain anymore. And I didn't want to hide it. And I wanted to heal from it, and I needed help.
So what were your first couple steps?
So after coming back off of that expedition, I went and sought a counselor, you know, a therapist. And we began our journey, and we're still, you know, together today after all these years. I actually relocated back here to Florida because I had moved away, and I realized that I had established such a rapport and a bond with that therapist that I just, it wasn't healthy for me to try to embark with another therapist, because I tried that and it just didn't work. And so the first step was getting therapy and committing to the therapy and committing to doing the hard work. And then the second part of that was establishing a firm foundation of support, circle of support, that held me accountable. You know, accountability plus community for me is essential for my long-term well-being, mental health, because the status of our mental health governs everything else. You know, and if my mental health was off, everything else was off. My relationships, my finances, my social, my spiritual, everything was off, because I believe that governs it. And so once I started really addressing that, I reconnected with my spirituality, with my, you know, Abba Father. I started addressing some of the traumas and unpacking the trauma. Because for me, you know, in layman's terms, mental illness is unprocessed pain and suppressed emotions.
Okay, so now for me, like, I just had a young lady on not even an hour ago. She had her whole family wiped out in front of her. And she had to forgive the person, or she forgave the person that did it.
Yeah.
You know, so we started talking about forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
I think to move ahead in life, we have to learn forgiveness, because, you know, I'm a Christian. You know, I believe that the Lord, you know, Jesus Christ is my Lord and Savior. And, but in order for me to be forgiven, I have to learn to forgive. And I always tell people, you know, I've been in recovery over 30 years, mm-hmm. that I was taught that if you want to start getting, you know, moving ahead in life, you have to forgive the people that hurt you.
And yourself.
Yep. Then you have to ask forgiveness for people that you've hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And then the hardest person to ask for forgiveness is yourself. But once you forgive yourself, you can let that rucksack go and you don't have to carry that weight anymore. So talk to us about forgiveness.
So forgiveness for me, it was a long journey, because it's intentional. It's something that you have to intentionally do. It's an act. It's not something you feel, because you don't always feel it. And so because so many of my memories were suppressed when I started coming up, I just started making a journal and listing the names of the people that I wanted to forgive. And I started writing out, you know, little prayers. I forgive this person for what they did to me. And then I started thinking back on the things that I'd done to hurt people because I was hurting. And I made another list, and I asked for forgiveness for these people. And some of the people that I was able to connect with and reach out to, I physically called them or communicated for their forgiveness, you know, and sometimes some did, some didn't. But, you know, the more that I did that, the lighter I felt. And the most challenging, you know, you're right. You hit it on the head, Richard. The most challenging thing to do is to forgive yourself. You know, because I felt after a certain point that maybe there was something that I was doing that was causing these things to happen to me. So, but my saving grace was my faith, you know, my relationship with my Abba Father and how he was so loving and tender and walking me through, you know, the road to recovery and to healing. And it's a continual process. And so that is one of the things that, forgiveness means to me. And in order for me to do that, I had to unmask. I had to remove the mask that I'd been wearing all of these years, you know, and I love acronyms. You know, my acronym for unmask is I had to unveil the hurt within, like get to the root of it, not just dealing with the symptoms, because when we are hurt, it impacts our emotions. It impacts our soul, you know? And so I had to deal with those things that were in my soul and deal with my emotions and allow myself to express the full spectrum of emotions that God has given us as a form of expressing our feelings. And then I had to nurture the longing within. Like I had to really, I sit with, like, who is Michelle and what does Michelle want and what is Michelle's purpose here? So that pain that I experienced actually helped me to find the passion, which helped me to find my purpose, which pushed me into power. And so I was able to, you know, the next letter in the word unmask is manifest, to manifest the dreams, goals, and desires that were then, that were buried within my heart, so that I could truly come alive and be, feel safe to be me, so that I could attract the kindred connections that were already preordained for my life. So that was the road to forgiveness for me.
Now, I love it. Now, you know, a lot of people that I've talked to, you know, like yourself, like myself, that have been through it and come out the other side, you know, for some reason, we're able to turn our mess into our message.
Yes.
So when did that come about? When did you start saying, you know what, the Lord has a bigger plan for me? So what was that like? Take us back to your, to when that first started happening. What were some of those events that's getting, when you started to get your story out there?
So initially it started out as what I thought was a journal entry back in 2008. I started writing what I thought was going to be a journal, and I just started, I titled it Releasing the Pain, and Releasing the Pain ended up being a book, you know, of me releasing the pain of the things that I'd experienced and how God brought me through that and changed me and took me down the path of forgiveness to my husband for all of the abuse, to my abusers for the things that they did. So that was the beginning of the journey, and I wrote that book. And then I was, I spoke that same year at a Christian women's event that we had every month. It was called a women's tea. And I just simply went up and shared my story, and the number of women that came forward, you know, as young as 16, as old as in their 70s, 80s, who were hurting silently and were carrying this. That was the beginning of me realizing that my pain had purpose. And so that was the journey. And so continuing on, I wrote another book in 2011, and it was called Random Thoughts from the Heart of Collection. And I just penned, you know, poems and prayers and scriptures and reflections that got me through some pretty dark times. And it was called Random Thoughts from the Heart of Collection. And that was the journey to me walking into and finding my purpose. I started speaking more on a larger platform after that. And it was all about healing and recovery and recovering from grief and unmasking so that we can truly heal and, you know, heal and be who we were originally created to be. And so now that's morphed into, you know, since 2015, I started a nonprofit, Healing Women, Healing Nations of Northeast Florida, where I help women and women veterans, you know, reintegrate back into the community after their service, but also come back from trauma, whatever the trauma is, domestic, sexual, you know, domestic assault, sexual assault, mental health challenges secondary to trauma. And so, and then that morphed into Michelle Speaks, which is, you know, a life recovery coaching organization. But I also highlight other individuals that have turned their tragedies into triumphs and, you know, do life coaching and empowerment events and support groups, all related to healing after trauma, unmasking the trauma, healing the hurt, you know, establishing a foundation to freedom. And so that, all of that was birthed out of all of the pain that I endured.
Well, one thing that I love and about you is, you know, you say if you hide it,
you can't heal it.
And I've also heard from a lot of other speakers, because I'm a big self-development guy. I'm always learning. I'm always trying to become the better, a better man, a better father, husband. And they say that you're sick as your secrets.
Yes. Silence breeds sickness.
So talk to us about, you know, sometimes, you know, like for when I know when I go public speak and I get up on the stage, you know, I tell everybody, listen, you know, what I'm about to talk about, this isn't for everybody. Mm-hmm. This is for that one person right out there. There's one person that's struggling right now that needs to hear this. So your message may not be for everybody, mm-hmm. but for someone.
It's very niched. Yes.
So talk to us about that and how to, you know, because a lot of people, you know, I've been taught, you know, now that I have over 360 episodes, I'm still learning, but I realize that if you're talking to everybody, you're talking to nobody. Mm-hmm. So talk to us about finding your niche and finding your people.
You know, Honestly, I really, and this is just my belief and my thoughts, that you don't find your people find you. You just speak the message that you're called to speak. Because as I began to share my story, and I knew that I was called to women, but I specifically knew that I was called to women that were suffering from things that that society deems taboo to talk about. And so that's initially what I started doing at events, at women's groups. I was started being invited out to speak about healing from trauma, healing from abuse. And so I knew from the beginning, that's what I was called to. And so that's what I did. And then I just started writing and journaling. I've always been a journaler. I believe that's a good way to get your thoughts out the top, out of your body, because our body holds trauma. And the more I began to write and draw and sit with, the Lord and seek his guidance, the more he gave me, the clearer the vision became. Habakkuk 2 and 2 says, write the vision and make it plain. And the more I started writing and I just started creating the platforms and speaking, and the people were drawn to me.
So now, how do you, because a lot of people I've talked to, they started coaching businesses, they started speaking, and then all of a sudden, bam, COVID slapped them in the mouth. Mm-hmm. And they had to pivot. Did you have to pivot during the times of COVID with your speaking business, or did it flourish?
Most definitely, I had to pivot. And I will say that it is flourishing initially. Because, I had some other challenges, personal challenges, like I encountered a major injury in the beginning of COVID. So I was pretty much homebound anyway. I severed all of the ligaments that support my right leg and fractured the femur. So all of the ligaments, ACL, PCL, MCL, meniscus, all of that had to be replaced because I had severed it. So I had a series of surgeries that set me back. But even during that, even though I was down, I had already started doing things virtually, but I just pivoted to a virtual platform, as far as doing the coaching and different organizations were inviting me in to do virtual speaking engagements to speak to their organizations, such as U of Health and, Girls Inc. and the Shell Suite Community Resource Center, because when COVID hit, the big thing was addressing people's mental health. And so I'm a mental health advocate. I advocate on behalf of NAMI, as a speaker and a volunteer status. So doors started opening up, even though other doors had closed as far as doing empowerment and events and in-person workshops. I pivoted very easily to virtual. And then that's when I started the Michelle Speaks podcast. I started highlighting other individuals that had turned their messages. And so it was easy, I believe, for me to pivot because I'm very familiar with virtual platforms. And I had a burning desire in me to get the word out, to be a source of hope, to provide help, produce hope, and promote healing. And so all of it was not paid. But I believe with anything, you give value and then, it attracts things to you. And so that has been what I've seen happen. And during this time, I was able to create some online platforms so people can recover and heal from the safety and security of their own homes.
Okay, so what is coming up for you? What do you have going on? How do we find you and how can we support your mission?
So as far as what's coming up, I'm actually this Friday going to be speaking at an event in St. Augustine, Florida, Hear Her Voice, Hear Our Voice, advocating on behalf for women veterans. And so, if you want to support me or, enroll in any of the programs or get on a discovery call, you can reach out to me at Michelle Speaks, MichelleSpeakz.com. And, everything that I'm doing is there. I just released another book project with a group of phenomenal women, the Think Pink Project, just talking about how we've used our adversities to start businesses and to, help others through their journey, from pain, from passion to pain, from pain to passion to power to to Purpose to Power is one of my stories, you know, in that group project. And so there's a lot on the horizon. I have another event coming up December 11th, where I'll be speaking at a conference here locally in Jacksonville. You know, so if you want to reach out to me, you want to connect, you want to partner, I just connected with an organization in California where I will be hosting some of my courses on their site and, you know, collaborating with them to get the message out, not just women veterans, but veterans period heal, because that is my heart, but also, you know, help women heal.
All right. So last question I ask everybody, and I ask 1,000 people, I get 1,000 different answers. Mm-hmm. We live in a COVID world. We still live in a crazy world. We got grandparents homeschooling kids. We got parents driving for Uber because they lost their jobs. So we live in a crazy busy world. So if I ask the average American to do something in 7 days, they're never going to get to it. But if I ask somebody that's listening right now to take an actionable step in the next 24 hours, they're more likely. Mm-hmm. So if there's somebody out there that's listening to this right now that is struggling with their mental health, what is something they can do in the next 24 hours to start to get some help?
If you are struggling with mental health, what you can do right now, you don't have to wait 24 hours, is to get online and connect with NAMI, N-A-M-I, National Alliance of Mental Illness. Just put that in Google, and there's locations worldwide. All of the services they offer and provide are free. And it is an excellent circle of support to establish a foundation of support as you begin your journey to healing and recovering from the challenges of mental health. And if you are in crisis, of course, reach out and call the crisis hotline. I don't have that number in front of me.
Okay.
But I believe it's, I don't want to get the wrong information. Yeah, I don't have it in front of me, but that's what you can do. Just know that you are not alone. Don't isolate yourself. Reach out. Pick up the phone, call someone, connect with someone, because what you're encountering is temporary and you don't want to make a permanent decision out of a temporary crisis.
I love that. That actually is one of my favorite quotes. You know, suicide is a permanent solution to a temporary problem. Mm-hmm. My favorite quote of all time is, things don't happen to you, they happen for you. And right. Everything is a teachable moment. So I want to thank you so much for coming on. I want to thank our sponsors at Balish Woodworks. Guys, if you love woodwork, if you love even coasters that have your name engraved on them for good Christmas stuff, check out BalishWoodworks.com. Michelle, thank you so much for everything you're doing. Keep doing great works. You're saving, changing the world one person at a time.
Thank you so much, Richard, and thank you for having me on.
All right, guys. VM Nation, keep crushing it. Remember, guys, the only way to go is but up. Have a great week.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us today. Please hit subscribe and share. Please feel free to leave us a comment.